Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 24th, 1998. In the fireside room this evening is Richard Bondi. Session number is 98-1 and is titled Investigations into Spiritual Rhythm. Let's listen in.
That's right.
It joins a lot of people. And tonight we're going to have a kind of an experimental workshop in some issues around rhythm and spirituality. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do a few things and we'll reflect on them, and then you're going to do a few things and we'll all reflect on them and back and forth and see what happens. In psychotherapy that I do, I've been doing this in group work for about 3 or 4 years, using some kind of rhythmic focus to close and end the group. It acts like a kind of drawing of a circle within which the group discussion goes on and takes place, and I'll say a little bit more about that later. But to begin, I've got my own bell besides the bell up there. Also, if anyone here is congenitally helpful as I am, don't worry about reminding me to say, please roll the tape, because we're not taping it, it's an experimental thing. So. Did you hear that?
check one.
Get in a comfortable position. That may be an oxymoron in these chairs, but Roberta loves these chairs, so Diana, she's very.
You gotta shut that door because the sound will carry into the next room.
That's true. Maybe someone who can get there faster than Roberta. It's bad when they get you with your own guitar. So get in a comfortable position. I'm going to strike this tubular bell 3 times in silence, and then this reverberates a while, and we'll let it reverberate, and that will kind of calm us down from the day we've come from, one hopes, and center us a little bit on what we're about to do. Said since we'd be experimenting along the way, before I proceed, did anybody have any reaction or feeling or anything to that they'd like to share? Strike another bell.
Like sonar therapy. I felt it.
It sent, please.
I was going to say, I felt myself, as the hum of the bell was fading, I was listening more to, I could hear things. I mean, I was aware of what was, while sitting here with my eyes shut, I could hear the sounds from outside. Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I could hear you move your finger.
Yeah, I'm going to briefly demonstrate each of them before I let you hand them out. And there's you move your finger over it, it changes the tone.
Mm-hmm. It drops the breath down into the belly for me. Mm-hmm.
It generally, most times, quiets people down, and oftentimes if we do it a little long enough, your pulse rate will lower. One of the things I'm interested in is mind-body-soul connections, as was said up above in the announcement. And one of the most ancient things we have is pulse. I'm not a musician. In fact, that's very important to the way I work with this. We were blessed with musicians, as we were last evening, and I'm all for them. That's not what I'm interested in. I'm not particularly talented in that way. Noises all over, in fact, in the world. Because what precedes musicians who are primary interest in a melody, which is driven by rhythm, but underneath that is noise. And we hear noises all around us. And as you said, focusing on one noise sometimes lets you help zero in. You're made aware of other ones that are around. Other times other people find that focusing on a single noise clears out stuff and they don't hear the other ones. The other instrument that I used to start with other times is I was too fragile to bring is a Tibetan bell that some of you may have seen or heard before. It's sometimes called a singing bowl. That has a long, when you can either make noises like this and make it hum, or you can strike it and it has a very long decay. And so these focusing rhythms sometimes can bring us back. The focusing tones can bring us back, and the only thing rhythmic about that really was that I did it in threes. A three is a rhythm that is common in many, many cultures and in many theologies, many spiritualities. Important things appear in units of three. I want to do something else now and then see what you think about this. That was 60 seconds of rhythms, four different kinds of rhythms. Did anybody have a wild guess as to what they were? I mean, they were. This is something that goes on so readily in us that we don't normally, it's transparent to us. Those were four different human pulses. The first was a pulse of a normal, healthy human hiking a moderate distance along the trail. The second was a slower pulse of a resting at rate pulse that most of you in here probably have sitting in a chair. The third one was a going to sleep pulse, slowed down considerably from that. And then the last one was heading towards the top of Honeymoon Heights with the pulse going. We all have, it's meant to show, we all have a pulse and a rhythm in our blood all the time. About 80 beats a minute for most people walking around. Athletes who are in good training are lower than that. People who are in bad training are short of breath for one reason or another are higher than that. But 80 is so much the norm in all human beings that it's the rate that CPR is used to try to revive hearts, send it back into normal rhythm. I was roughly doing about 110, 80, 60, and about 130. We're capable of a wide range of these pulses, but we normally don't think about them because they're going on, they're part of our autonomic nervous system. A lot of what the spiritual use of rhythm is to draw on some of those pulses. I'll give you an example from a very ancient tradition. This, by the way, is a frame drum. A frame drum is any drum whose diameter is greater than its depth. So all the drums here are frame drums except for these two. And they're different kinds of drums. Frame drums are usually one-sided, although sometimes both-sided, and they're probably the oldest kind of drum with a skin on it. Their earliest drums are probably logs or wood, pieces of wood, and probably look more like the first one there, except with hollowed out and little slits in it. And probably they're found now in Africa, is where they're most developed. But the earliest we have record of, archaeological records of a drum, go back to about 5500 BC. We have paintings that go back to 35,000 BCE. Wood and skin don't last very long, which is why we have paintings long before we have actual artifacts. This is a style that has become to be known as the shamanic style, shamanic drum. Shamans were a religious people, a religious sort of, they weren't like priests, they're more like mediators between the spirit world and the world above, this world and the world below, on behalf of the people. And they're actually, they call that in Lapland area, but the word was extended by Mircea Eliade, a scholar of history of religions, to cover many different quote-unquote primitive religions.
What's Lapland?
That's Norway, very high Scandinavian countries. People who follow reindeer. Mm. This is a shamanic beat. That's anywhere, I don't have a metronome here, but that's anywhere between 180 and 220 beats per second. And what that eventually does, and this would we have to have a longer workshop, that puts most human beings into a trance state if you do it for about 15 minutes. Shamans also used rattles, this is the actual apple from the Garden of Eden.
The seeds are dry.
The seeds have been very dry. There's no variation in that rhythm, because in the shamanic rhythm, because it's meant to entrain you into it. And it's meant, you notice it's way above our normal heart rate. It's meant to put us eventually into a place where we're almost doubling our normal heart rate at an exertion level. And various interesting things happen at that point. But it works because it's repetitive, but it's boring because it's repetitive if you do it at short distances.
Is the attempt to make your heart rate go up to the level of the drum?
No, your heart rate isn't usually raised. In fact, often your heart rate gets lowered. The intent is somehow to more raise your consciousness of yourself up out of the plane of ordinary rhythm. Drives you away. It drives you out of the body rather than towards the body by giving you a beat that's impossible for your heart rate to keep up with. So that's one use, but frame drums have other uses that are, is also interesting. I don't know if there's something Freudian about this, but in most cultures, when drums are played with a stick, they're played by men, and when drums are played by hand, they're played by women. Now that in the 19th, 20th centuries has been blurred a little bit. There are women shamans who use a stick, and there are men who play the conga drums with their hands, as we saw last night. But the most more ancient traditions separated that. That's because there's another ancient use of the drum. What kind of, what might use does that elicit in you?
It's
war. I mean, it's anger.
It's warlike. The more ancient, original use of the drum with a stick, when it wasn't done by the shaman, was done to keep people in time and drive them on to battle. And notice that that has a bit of a difference. Instead of the constant, it has an accent beat. And different cultures develop different accent beats for their drummings. The Celtic traditions are particularly elaborate in this. It's also interesting that as you march to war, you generally had this very... The drumming after the battle was often much more expressive and mournful or celebratory or whatever. But that kind of a thing, what it wanted people to do was entrain everybody into the same rhythm, march forward, kill the enemy. And so that, is designed to take you out of your normal rhythm, but match you with other people present. We're going to do a little experiment now. We can't really adjust our pulse rates very easily, but one rate we can have voluntary control over is our breathing. So we're going to do a pulse experiment, or rather a breathing experiment. We're going to try to breathe together and see what that experience is like. Normally, we're all breathing here at different rates, and we won't actually be able to match everything. And this is, there's no quiz at the end, so you know, no one's watching up above. Oh, that person is with me. But I'm going to do a very simple four count beat. Four counts is the most universal beat. Any guesses why? In terms of body, because we're bipedal creatures. And we generally fall into one, two, three, four. One. It's easy for us to fall into that as we're walking. Almost all of you who hike do it unconsciously or consciously, trying to get into a rhythm.
In the Jungle Book, it's
on the left, two, three, right. That's that.
That's another reason. The military one, I was doing a little fast. That was the sort of the moment of attack. But the military one is would be left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. But we're going to do this slower than that, and rather than one, two, we're going to emphasize the what's in between, which is one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. And what I want you to do is breathe in. I'll just start doing it. You can't do it wrong, basically, so just... There'll be an accent beat that you start on. Start breathing in on that, and then the next time you hear that, breathe. Start breathing out. So it'll be a long one, two, three, four, one, in. Okay. So we'll do that for a little bit, and then I'll change the pace of that, and you try to change your breathing. And what we'll do is we'll have all of us more or less breathing in the same pulse. And changing that pulse, we'll see what that feels like. So this is, as I said, it's experimental.
I was very relaxed when you're going slow.
Yeah.
When you're going fast, I was almost like,
yeah.
I like slow. Yeah. Just fingertips, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. the breathing slow is a meditative rhythm. Mm-hmm. And one of the uses of drums in spiritual traditions has been, and drums and rhythm, has been to help and train those present into either a more relaxed state than they came in at or an excited state. And in training breathing, which we just did briefly again, if we're going on, this is sort of the thing that needs to be done over a two-hour period or so, but if we'd done it long enough, the slow breathing, you could almost, most of us could probably look around, well, we didn't look around, but if you had looked around, you could see most everybody breathing in and out at the same time, which is almost something you never experience. And the effect of being in the group of people who are all breathing and pulsing at the same rate can be very powerful. When you increase the tempo, then you go, you do start to hyperventilate almost, and that can also be used in to excite, add energy, to super oxygenate. But then you got to bring people back down with the longer beats and the longer rhythms. Part of the reason I'm into this is I think, and what we're about to start doing, is that most of us are naturally born with, or all of us are naturally born with the pulse of our blood. Actually, our first pulse was what? Our mother's heartbeat. And the coursing of it through her veins. Actually, a little slower than the heartbeat by the time it's in the womb. So there's a kind of an echo effect. We're all born with it, but then oftentimes in modern culture, in so-called primitive cultures, and I use that so-called because it's a lot of primitive cultures are more sophisticated than us in ways around these issues. So-called primitive cultures, people didn't lose that sense of rhythm. They held on to it through various spiritual practices that were linked with rhythm instruments, either that were done on their behalf by people who were not entertainers or performers, but to use the generic word, shamans, or they did it themselves. Just naturally. We won't have enough instruments for everybody here, by the way, so some people will be playing their legs. And did it in moving through walking, moving through various rhythms of life. In our culture, oftentimes we tend to get shamed out of that awareness and that knowledge. This often happens in grade school. I'm seeing a few nods of, I'll just relate my particular horror story to which you can add your own individually if you wish. I took guitar lessons. I had a brother, and my folks decided, well, everybody needs to know music, although they themselves didn't. But they thought that we ought to, but partly because they didn't. So they didn't have enough money for a piano, so they bought a guitar and an accordion. Which makes a very strange duet, I can tell you. Because I was the older brother by 13 months, I got the guitar. And my poor younger brother got the accordion. Although he was bigger than I was, able to handle it. And I had lessons from a guy named Howard Early. I still remember this vividly, Howard Early Music Studio. Howard Early was was greatly misnamed. He should have been named Howard Late because my lessons were in the morning. And I realize now he was hungover most of the time. He sat like this and smoked and had me play the caissons go rolling along over and over again and kept saying, not so loud. This doesn't inspire a love of music. Especially when in some way went mandatory, and I still shudder to remember my parents, who were wonderful people and soon gave up on this when they realized the difficulty it was causing us, trotted us out at a party and had us play a guitar accordion duet of Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. Which is,
did you sing to
it? Oh, yes. So I got a long way away from music. I had several other humiliating experiences in high school. And was generally, I thought, well, I don't have an ear for music. I can't do it. I can't keep a rhythm. I can't do, these kinds of self-shaming that we learn to heap on ourselves. A number of years ago, I just thing popped into my head, it's time to make some noise. So I thought, well, maybe I can't keep a melody, but I could make noise. And that's how I got back. I got back into picking up. First, my drums that I couldn't bring with me were bigger. They're called, and there's a shamanic drum about this big, frame drum. There's a Celtic drum about this big, called a boron, and then a smaller one. But they didn't transport well in the 2-day trip from Atlanta to here. That's where I started, and they're wonderful drums. Because you can be very, very expressive with a drum. Individually, without having to worry about what meter you're in or whether you're being traditional or not. I'll demonstrate that in a little bit. But also, anybody can pick up anything here and start doing something with it, which we're going to demonstrate as well. I'll start by demonstrating the idea being also then that doing something with it and doing something together, I hope brings, and this has been my experience in the groups I lead, breaks down some barriers of shame. It's very interesting that these groups that meet over a number of weeks, weekly, and at the start of the groups, people, especially the women, because women have often been socialized, be quiet. And I had this one woman in particular, she picked up the shaman's drum I have is bigger than this, but it's sounds similar. She picked it up and she went, first time. By the end of the, by about 6-8 weeks, she was going. And her ability to speak in the group vastly increased. And I think this is one thing that when we are able to, partly we're doing this together in front of each other, we drop some of these shame barriers, and we also begin, lots of times, and I hope you'll experience this here tonight, we begin to talk back to each other with rhythms before we talk back to each other in voices, and that enables the vocalization. The more evolutionarily primitive expression when we share it enables the higher expression. That's one of the group contemplative spiritual uses of it, I would say. And the other one that I find great, going off, especially these woods are terrific, going off and just playing by myself, because you kind of get into being able to, you know, your prayers rise like incense, some kind of thing, to use a different sort of a metaphor. And some people I've worked with, particularly with bells more than with drums, although the boron is a very good contemplative drum. Some people with bells will use bells to strike like we did at the start, to begin and end a prayer time, to help their focus come back on that. But we're going to play with some of these different things, and I'll just say briefly what they are. You've already known what this is. Who wants to use this? Well, we can pass them around as we want to, so other people get a chance.
But can I have the apple?
Roberta, tell your theory.
Okay. The apple I was with him. And I said, oh, Richard, get the apple. It's wonderful. Women will love that apple. He said, no, nobody will want that apple. I said, oh, please, Richard. So I finally talked him into getting that apple, and he also got me a little apple of my own. Now in Richard's groups, the apple is the first thing that everybody asks.
The women, actually. Many of the men ask for that, as a matter of fact. This is called a musical fruit, by the way. That was made by the Remo company. I didn't get the banana. They have one.
The reason that I wanted it is that my earliest memory is of my dad my very first memory is of my dad lifting me up to reach for an apple.
Wow.
That's my first
memory. You can get one at a drugstore.
Yeah, any of these things are easily obtained. Now, these are have a name, technical name in music. Clavis. I can't pronounce them very well, but what we normally call them are sticks.
Yeah.
And anthropologists call them idiophones. And they're one of the, this means they look like what they sound like. Sticks that clang together. They're not, you don't have to construct them out of anything. You see them lying there and you say, oh, okay. But you can do lots of interesting things with them, rhythm-wise. Who wants the sticks? who wants the shaman's drum? With the stick.
Thank you.
We've already had that one. Here's one. Some of these I found lying around here. This is one you'll remember from some of the bands you might have been shamed in. This one I was playing as you came in is called a kanjira. It's from the southern parts of India. It can be played in a number of ways, very complicated that I haven't gotten to take honor yet, but it can also just be done like that. But if you take your first finger and your third finger, in a kind of a rotating, twisting fashion, you can get that sort of sound out of it. Just one little jingle. And if you want to get really fancy, you can stick what's called in drumming, you can stick one of the, and rather than bouncing off, listen to the difference in the tone here. I'm going to use this drum because it's a little most of the time. This is called a tar. It's a North African drum, and they come in various sizes, but they're. I'll use that one probably. This is called a rick. It's an Egyptian drum. It's the forerunner of the tambourine. As you can see, it's a little fancier than a normal tambourine. There's a double row of jingles, and it's actually played in a, you can play it just again like this, but don't worry about, you can play it like that, or. But you can also hold it in a kind of a grip fashion like this, and then it does, gives you a chance. Notice what I'm doing, and that is striking more towards the center, not the center, the midway between the center and the edge. I get a lower tone and then a rim tone on the end. Anybody want to play with? Oh, we got a. These are cymbals, which you can either play by your one by themselves or. Against each other. They're actually, they're used a lot in African and Caribbean and Latin American music, but they're very interesting because if you cut the head off and put little two birds on them and have it all metal instead, it looks very much like a sistrum, which is an ancient Greek instrument going back thousands of years. Who wants one of these?
I'll take one.
I found this lying around and this complicated instrument to hit it with. the basic cowbell kind of thing. Does anyone want to hit the cowbell? Or if you want to do the
cowbell? Oh, good.
Yeah.
I have a pen.
Oh, you have your own instrument. And then this is like a large version of the Rick. And it has a, you can, okay. Reflection. Yeah. Yeah. Now that starts, that's a very good, because that's just part of this, we all have this in us. And when we're armed like this, we're going to use it.
It's dangerous, I know.
This is called an agogo.
Yeah,
an agogo. An agogo. It's Brazilian, it's based on African instruments that are slightly larger and deeper in tone. This is one Roberta got me for Father's Day. It's part of a tradition that many cultures have, again, of making a musical instrument out of something that has animal powers in it by making, you know, like the apple is a vegetative thing. There's symbols of this here. This is... But besides the basic one, you can also do... Let's see. I think we're down to. This is a one I just found here. These two, they're meant to be played with a flat hand. You got to pretend like you're testing an iron to see if it's hot. Bouncing and then bouncing off, or you. Stick, it's a different, so either bounce or stick. And this drum would be typical of ones in Africa, Latin America, North America, lots of different places.
These kneelers are pretty effective.
Well, we'll get to that. Thanks. And this is a little heavy to play. This would be typical of a could be played with a stick also, but it goes with that. Now the rest of you can either just be silent and observe, or can play your bodies, or tap your fingers, or clap your hands, or as Roberta points out, play your kneelers. And if you want to, or if you can talk somebody out of it, we can switch around instruments as we go along. We're looking for something there.
Yeah.
Oh, is there a
tambourine?
Basic tambourine.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
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 Over here.
All right. Itself. What we're going to do, I'm going to start a, remember we did that four beat reading rhythm. Well, I'm going to do that, but let you join in and do anything you want. You can follow the rhythm, you can go against it, you can accent it with the bell, or you can do whatever you want. And I'll, when I get ready to stop, I'll stop it like that, and then we'll, because we're going to try three different things, and then have an ending jam session where we'll do whatever we want. So the first thing is we'll try just this sort of pulse breathing rhythm, except don't worry about trying to breathe with it, but I mean, you can do whatever you want. I'll just... Too. Well, I'll start you off with this basic rhythm, and then I'll improvise a little bit, and you can do anything you want, and I'll come back to the basic rhythm. But any things about how that felt? Yeah.
It takes a minute to realize that something's changed. It's kind of goes through the group.
Yeah.
First you change, and then someone else changes.
That's one of the very interesting things that happens, that it's like the change is tossed back and forth among different people. And sometimes you can get a conversation going, and this will, when we do the ending improv, we'll realize this more likely, because we'll go on for a longer time and see how it develops then. Sometimes you will have two drums talking to each other, or the bells going this way, and who knows what the frog will be doing. This kind of stuff. So that was the four beat one to start, and now we're gonna do something that's a little bit different. I'll do this beat first, so you can hear. Oh yeah, and this is the time in between. If you'd like to pass around, hand off or change, you can.
Sure,
I'll
borrow your chair.
Swap the chair for the sister. Okay, we had the first one was in the walking beat, the breathing beat. Hard to stop, hard not to join in. No, but stop, try to resist that for a second while you hear, and tell me what the difference with this one is. Or four beat measure. And the different traditions in different parts of the world have lots of different measures. And lots of times in drumming circles and groups like this, what will happen is you'll play one off against the other. And we're going to do that in the third exercise. But now, I'll repeat the seven beat rhythm and go into an improvisation briefly and then go back to the seven and then we'll end. So see what if the seven beat thing feels any different and inspires you into different sort of things than the eight one did. Thank you. different? Did anything feel different about that?
It felt more open-ended.
It's more open-ended. If we were walking on that, we'd have to change feet. You know, it's not a military rhythm. Unless you're Beetle Bailey, I guess, or you might be a military rhythm. But there's more of a lilt to it. Because you're not just going left, right, left, right. If you are, then you switch. And so there are a lot of things, especially in the frame drum world, that are played in 7-beat rhythms, 11-beat rhythms, and 15-beat rhythms, where you have different patterns that are repeated, but they're that number of beats in them. This I kept really simple. I just had the one basic stroke for you to find, and then played accent strokes on the side like that. Let's try now something where we need several people to volunteer to be foot soldiers. That is to make to keep a ground beat of a four. One, Roberta, and Peter. Okay, that'd be good with that one. Yeah.
So 1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, what I'm going to start playing, and I'll let you start that, and people can play up against that. And over against that, I'm going to play a rhythm in 12. Now. Four, then one way that's three sets of four, but you'll see if you'll notice one of the things that is a change I'll do, and then we'll see. Some of you might follow the four beat, some of you might find this one, or others play against it. But you start, and let's have three different people do that because of that drum is good. The rattle, and what do you got back there? You got your, okay. That's a good one. I was playing a rhythm that had a missing beat, because one of the things that rhythm is known by is its absence. So the dropping a beat out can have an effect that's very different from keeping it in. So if I just kept that in, I would have played 1, 2, 3, 4. So 12 times, keeping the 4-4 rhythm. But I turn it into a 12-beat rhythm by going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, silence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, silence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And you notice how that feels different.
Yeah.
Because you're leaving out something, and so you're filling it in almost internally. Mm-hmm. The silence is something that, oh, what's there. And since we were, since some of you were going along in the four, we were actually playing that four beat over. I started playing the 12 beat over against it, and then others joined in with that. Do you want to try that one again now that you know the pattern behind it? And yeah. Some people can do it with the. We still need some people to do our ground beats. Okay, that's a good one for that. You do it again? Okay. So, and I'll let you start, and then when I start in, you may listen for the silent one again and try to, some of you try to match that, others may match the ground beat, and others improvise. But at least a few people try to match the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 silence. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1. Okay? Okay. Start the ground beat then. The other beat? It's harder to do it because that ground beat of the four is much more native to our pulse. We talked about four to our rhythm, to our bipedal nature than the offbeat. But the offbeat, when we hear it without the ground beat clouding it, follow it, and it also has that little hesitation, and it sounds interesting, and so on. So some of the more complex rhythms that play off against each other asked us to follow a different drum, literally, that's sometimes harder to do as we get going. Any thoughts at all, and what you've experienced now before we go into our. Trying to do our good compliant Holden Village time clock watching, closing free for all.
Do you use this in your work, or are you investigating it in for you?
Yeah, I use it in groups, in small groups. Uh-huh. I usually 6 to 8 people, I've also found I use it with some individual clients, mm-hmm. where I'll play. One drummer, and they'll play another instrument mm-hmm. back and forth. And I found it particularly useful. I have one drum, which I didn't bring here. It's called a dumbek. It's a Middle Eastern drum shaped like an hourglass. And this particular one is synthetic and indestructible. And I use that with children, because oftentimes, I'll do something, and the children they can do that, and they can't hurt it. It's also easy to get sound out of. Children also, since I've got it, go for the frog. And they're able to make amazing kind of conversations back and forth with me in it. And I find then that opens up the verbal conversation, both with the adults and with individuals. I'm liable to do this bigger sort of a thing on retreat settings, and then we'll go on at different times and lengths and see what happens. I'll also have the bigger drums. Roberta, I don't know if you could say the effect that the bigger Boron has, which is unlike anything we've got here.
Well, I'm not sure what I can say what the effect is, but when I broke my ankle in March, I was in the hospital for a week, and I had lots of metal put in my leg, and then I was really sick when I got home for another 5 weeks or so. And Richard would play the big drum for my leg. Yeah, it sounds very screwy, but it was like my leg was absorbing that sound. I could actually feel it in my leg, and it felt like it was knitting things up in there. Mm. And
was very healing, and also I could
ultrasound.
Yeah. What was that?
Ultrasound.
Ultrasound. Yeah, it really was the ultrasound. But it also helped me focus so that I could have a kind of meditative prayer, contemplative prayer, sort of centered on the leg. Same time, and it may not have any connection whatsoever, but you all see me staggering around here. But the physical therapists and the surgeon are amazed at how much healing there is, because it's such a bad break that I'm walking much better than I'm supposed to be walking.
I'll give you a bit of a sense of it on this drum, although it's not, it's much much deeper, more resonant. One of the things about drums is they have many tones in them, so. Pure sound, and there's lots of undertones, overtones. You can hear me change the pitch when I do it like that. And with the big bow rod, it's possible because you have a wider area to change the pitch a lot.
Can you do the sort of scraping?
Yeah, and another thing that you do with it, well, I'll do like a brief one of this. That's what I'll do. I'll do a brief one of this, and then at one point I'll just nod my head and you all join in and we'll jam until we have to go. And yeah, last chance to change around. Someone have these? Oh, yeah, you've got a large car. Okay. So we'll have to stop, but I can't have, we can't bang into vespers. We could just march in.